Well, like I said, we are in this part four of our parenting series, and we want to really just help parents out. We've called this parental guidance required because that's really what parenting is all about. It's required leadership. It's required responsibility. And so to wrap up our series, I've given a couple talks. Pastor Roy's given a talk, but I thought, you know what? Of all of our combined years of experience, Pastor Roy and I, we make up very little of many years of parenting. So I thought, let's invite Pastor Ned, who's a parent and now a grandparent, to come up. And I wanted just to really make this very practical, very informal last part to discuss parenting together. Now, I just threw a bunch of questions at you. You had some time to prepare. And so this is going to be real informal. So if you're not a parent, again, this morning, or if you are way, you know, ways away from being a parent, just sit back, absorb it, listen. You know, I know this is maybe not exactly where you're scratching this morning. This is not exactly where you might be, but maybe someday you will be. And so I want you to tuck some notes away because we're going to be talking about a lot of good stuff this morning. So this is Pastor Ned Denlinger. He's our executive pastor / associate pastor / buildings manager. I don't know. He does everything. But to help us kind of set us the stage up, kind of just share a little bit about your background so everyone knows where you're coming from.
Okay. I know that everybody, you know, when you come to a church, maybe you're new here, and you probably tend to think of Kathy and think of me as the age that we are, and we've always been this age, right? Well, we haven't. And so here's a picture of Kathy and me on our first date, okay? Dave wanted to see the mustache. I'm not sure why.
I wanted the mustache to come out.
Why he's obsessed with the mustache, but he wanted to see it in a picture. So that's November 5th, 1977, and last November we celebrated our 40th anniversary of our first date. So that's where our family started, first date. Here's a picture of our kids when they were a young age. Our kids weren't always their age either. So there's Kristen. I think she's about 11 there. Nate's about 9. Katie's probably 7. And Kendra in the middle. This looks like a Christmas picture to me. I don't know why, but, you know. So I'm thinking Kendra's probably a year and a half there, just wild guess. Year and a half, 2.5. So that's our kids when they were little. And so then our kids got older.
As they do.
They do that. And So here's our firstborn, Kristen, and her family. And it isn't amazing what resolution does in modern times. So here's Kristen and Andrew. Andrew is currently my favorite son-in-law, and he'll remain that way until Katie gets married, and then he'll be one of my favorite
son-in-laws. There's competition there after that.
Yeah. And Ian in the middle is my second grandchild. Annie, obvious which one's Annie. Annie's my fourth grandchild, and Alec is my sixth grandchild, so he's the youngest. And then we have my second-born, Nate, in the next picture. This is Nate and Rayanne, and they have my first, third, and fifth grandchildren. Parker's on the left, and then Easton and Colton. And Colton and I kind of have a special bond because we're birthday buddies. He was born on my birthday, so that's kind of special. And then my third born is Katie. This is a great picture of Katie because that's Katie. She's the life of a party. She's always wanting to have fun, but she is one of the most capable, responsible, organized people you'd ever want to meet. She's a senior consultant for Deloitte Consulting, travels the company, doing consulting for companies like Ford and GM and Walmart and, you know, so Katie and I, of all our kids, Katie and I are probably the most alike. She describes herself as a female version of me. So I guess that's a compliment.
I guess that's a compliment.
Okay. And last but not least is Kendra. Kendra came along a few years later, and we love Kendra. And Kendra is special to us, and she knows this. She has Down syndrome. And so raising Kendra is kind of a little different than the other three. So this morning you'll probably hear a lot about our first three. And if you have a special needs child, you know that raising them is a little different. So not so much about that. That's a whole other topic. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the family.
Cool. All right. So help set the stage for us then as far as just parenting and all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I added this question, and the reason I did that is, as a dad and as a husband, the thing I hated the most is when Kathy would come to me and said, "Why can't you be more like John? He does this with his kids," or "Why can't you be more like so-and-so?" And so, wives, moms, please don't go to your husbands today and say, "Why can't you do it the way Ned did it?"
Or vice versa.
Yeah, right, or right, vice versa. Right. "Why can't you do it the way Kathy did it?" You know, I don't want to lose all my male friends in this church. So what I'm sharing is my perspective on parenting. And, you know, Kathy and I had similar parents. We were raised similarly. So coming together, we parented similarly. We had common ideas on that. And you have to parent the way you and your spouse come together and agree to parent. So it needs to be a discussion,
yeah,
not just a, "Hey, can you be more like?" So just be careful with that.
Right, right. So I, again, invited Pastor Ned up, not because he's the perfect parent or not because he did everything perfectly or well or, you know, all the time. Not even because you had great kids resolve, but this is just, you know, I wanted us to talk about certain topics today, and I thought this would be a great thing. So you might disagree with some of the things Pastor Ned did as a parent. That's okay, but we want you to be thinking about, this is, you know, what is, again, we talk about vision the first week, you know, what's the vision for my children? What do I really want to focus in on as they get older? And so to kind of help make sure that everyone knows we're not raising you and putting you on a pedestal this morning, although you're sitting kind of higher up, but what are some mistakes or some regrets that you have looking back over all those years of parenting? Just to kind of get that out of the way, what were some things that you thought, "Man, I wish I could do over"?
Well, you know, full disclosure, I kind of ask my kids this question because three of them are probably going to be here today. So, you know, I wanted to make sure I was being transparent. But not a lot of regrets in terms of looking back over the past. The one thing that they weren't even aware of that I was aware of is I wasn't... how do I say this with my dad in the room? I had the greatest dad in the world, and love him to death, and he was a great dad. But I kind of felt like growing up, as long as I got good grades and as long as I didn't get in trouble, I was kind of free to do whatever I wanted, and I got into some things I shouldn't have gotten into. Mm. And, yeah, and, you know, we weren't raised in a home where Christ was shared and we were Christ followers. We did go to church. My parents took me to church, but we didn't understand the essentials of the gospel yet. And so I kind of had a different upbringing. And so my regret was all the things that I wanted to do as a kid, to be a part of the popular crowd or to be well-liked at school, I assumed my kids would want to do. And so I was kind of always a step ahead of them, thinking I knew what they were going to want to do or get into trouble next, and they never did. And so I didn't trust them as much as I should have, and so I kind of imposed my wild childhood, my right, wild teenage years onto them, thinking that would be their motivation, and they just never had that. So
yeah,
that's probably one of my biggest regrets.
Okay. Well, that's easy to do. I find that I'm myself doing that, as far as, well, they must be just like me, so I better treat them just like me. But our kids are not just like us. They might have some characteristics, but certainly their own person.
And there's times at Christmas or Thanksgiving we'll be sitting around as a family and my kids will share something I did as a parent, and I'll just go, "Oh, did I do that?"
Yeah.
I can't bring them to mind, but, you know, okay, yeah, there's mistakes. We all make. We're, none of us are perfect parents.
Sure. Okay. So what, some of the things that you would say, "Man, I'm so glad that I did them and I would do them again," kind of thing.
But to introduce this first point, let me play a short video, okay? 30-second commercial, 1963. The resolution's terrible, but you'll get the gist. All right. So those of you that grew up in my era, you knew the Kool-Aid commercials and the Kool-Aid mom, you know. So,
I was the kid in that. You were. That's funny. That's just
that
funny.
Was 63.
That wasn't
66. So
that couldn't
I was
have
younger
been
than those kids.
You sure not 83?
Yeah. Positive. Anyway.
I'll have to check that one out.
So Kathy and I start meeting in November. We're courting and dating, and by March we were engaged. And so we had a lot of conversation in those 4 months. And I asked Kathy, I said, "So when we get married, what's that look like? What do you want to do?" And she says, "I want to be that mom." She says, you know that mom that comes out with a pitcher of Kool-Aid and all the kids are in the backyard? She goes, that's me. I'm like, okay. So our first decision, the thing that I know we did that we would do absolutely do again is having Kathy stay at home. And, you know, we made that decision. We paid the price to do that. In our premarital counseling, that was one of the suggestions, is when you get married and you're both working as a couple out of college, you know, just live off Ned's income so you get used to living off that. I mean, give Kathy's away or buy furniture with it or whatever, but get used to living off Ned's income so that when Kathy quits when you have children, it's not a big financial, you know, step down for you. And so we made that sacrifice. We always lived below our income level, and that was a decision we made, and we're still making it today because Kathy's a great grandma. She's a wonderful grandma. She's not older than so anyway, and she loves being a grandma, and so that's, there's huge value in that. So that was one. A second one is dinner time. My dad left home probably 6 o'clock every morning before I got up, and like clockwork, Monday through Friday, dad was home at six, and we ate dinner shortly after six. Rare exception. We always ate dinner as a family, and Kathy and I did that. Our family was always at home for dinner. And a good friend of mine from our sister church in Brookville told me one time, he says, always hold the family dinner table sacred. And we did that. And that was just a great time for us to connect as a family. What happened with your day? Is anybody upset? Is anybody happy? Anything, you know, just that was our connecting time as a family. And be honest, most of our evenings were empty. You know, most of our evenings were empty back then. And so we were a family at home, and it started at dinner. So I had my own business, and I had to learn that business had to fit from 8 to 5, 8 to 5:30, and tomorrow's another day. And if God can't provide enough money for us to live on in that period of time, then I need to close the doors and do something else. So that was the commitment we made. So dinner time. Another thing we did was kid breakfast. In their elementary years, I took turns with the kids, primarily my first three. And we'd go to Wednesday morning was breakfast morning. And I'd rotate the three of them, taking them one-on-one to breakfast and dropping them off at school. And that was just a neat time to connect with them as elementary kids and spend one-on-one. You know, this is dad time, okay? Mom, Kathy would stay at home. She had all the time in the world with them. A fourth point would be to know their friends. I think that's in all caps. You learn a lot about your kids by knowing who they hang out with. So don't just always send your kids over to their house, but have their friends over. Do things with their friends. Take them places. Get to know their friends. It tells you a lot about your child and whether or not they have the right friends. Finally, what's another one? Not finally, but another one was one-on-one time. Obviously, kid breakfast was one of those things. Another thing I did with my daughters was on their birthdays, starting at age 13, I always took them out for a nice date on their birthday. Kristen always wanted to get dressed up and, you know, go out to a really nice place. So I dropped some change on birthdays for Kristen on these dinners. And by the time she was 18, I got some kind of strange looks, you know, as I'm taking this young girl out to this nice restaurant and see Rob in the cradle or what. But it was my daughter. So, yeah, those were special times. Katie, we went out for dinner, but she wanted to wear jeans and go to Noodles and Company. You know, that was just Katie. And so it was different. And Nate and I, we had no problem spending one-on-one time.
Right.
Church work projects, fixing things around the house, sports, you know, whatever. Nate and I were always spending one-on-one time together, so that was pretty easy. But, yeah, one-on-one time with you, especially as dads. And, you know, if you're a working mom, you need to fix that in. You need to fit that in there, too. Expectations is another one. We expected our kids to be good. Is that weird?
I don't know.
We expected our kids. Family psychologists today will tell you that parents have shifted. There's been a major shift from parents expecting their kids to be good to parents expecting their kids to be bad. The default is they're going to be bad, so we arrange our life around the fact that our kids are going to be bad. And we expected our kids to be good, and we kind of expected that behavior, and there were consequences if there weren't, wasn't. And so, yeah, expectations were there.
Setting the bar high.
You're
glad that you did that.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. And if our kids needed to go in a room like this and sit still, they came in a room like this and sat still. I mean, it's just, we expected them to be good. So that was us. Responsibility. Give your kids responsibility, age-appropriate responsibility. You know, at 2 years old, you can give a kid responsibility. Maybe it's picking up toys or something, but age-appropriate responsibility all along the way. And I think our kids learned as they demonstrated responsibility, they got more freedom. They got more independence. And so we would always work on that. And, yeah, we could spend an hour on each of these, but, you know, the goal and responsibility thing is when they're 18, you turn them loose. So they better be responsible.
That's the hope.
Yeah. And so you don't want to be a helicopter parent when they're leaving at 19 and all that. So you want to be confident. So we were ready for our kids to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Good. All right. Next question. You want to roll that next question up? What are some common pitfalls, right? So as somebody who is kind of out of that, you know, young adult time, you know, with your kids, now that you've kind of stepped back and kind of watch us parents struggle through, what are some common pitfalls that you see that our younger parents, like myself, are making today?
Well, it appears to me that family life for young families is just hectic and chaotic and just constant. And like I described, I was home every night at dinner time, and we had family time in the evenings. That's just what we did.
And that's blowing my mind, because I'm thinking about our schedule, and I'm like, that's the goal, but that ain't happening very often.
And I had my own business, and I was an elder in the church, and so I had ministry responsibilities and all that. But so what I see is kind of in two areas. One is financial. I see 20 and 30-something young families wanting what their parents didn't get till they were in their 50s. Whether it's the houses or the cars or the furniture or the vacations, you know, you name it. And so you've got both couples working. And again, that's a personal choice. I'm not saying that's wrong. That's between you and God and what he wants your family to do. And so I see this financial pressure of, you know, you can't make life decisions. You can't change your course in life because you've got this financial overhead you need to maintain. And so that's number one. Number two is just time. I was talking to a family last week, and they were describing their schedule with sports to me, and it's just like, wow. And I thought back, and it's like, I played Little League Baseball, and it was for 2 hours on Saturday, and I played basketball in junior high and high school, and that was after school, and I played football, and that was after school, and my kids played sports, and that was after school, you know, and so we didn't have all these evenings where we were running all these different directions, and so Kathy took care of a lot of the errands we needed to run, so she was a stay-at-home mom, so our evenings were pretty peaceful. So just that time, I just see young families maybe not having as much time to just relax and a Sabbath rest, and probably that's a couple things I see. Third thing, just discipline. Inconsistency, lack of follow-through, and discipline. You've all been to Kroger's, and the mom tells her child, you do that one more time, and I'm going to rip your head off, right? Well, the kid knows she's not going to rip his head off, and so there's no follow-through on that, right? So if you tell your child you're going to do something based on their behavior, then follow through and do it. And then also, if you expect something of your child, expect it every time. Consistency, follow-through.
Okay. So when it comes to, obviously, being a Christ follower early on in parenting, you know, all that, I imagine Scripture probably played a big role in how you saw your philosophy of parenting, you know, saw your kids and all that. So what were some helpful Scripture passages that really kind of guided your parenting thinking throughout the years? Because I'm thinking like Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21 is a great passage. That if you have a rebellious son, take him to the elders and stone him. So I didn't know if there were, that's my life verse, but
you didn't mean our fifth son.
What's that?
Our fifth son.
That's what happened to your fifth son. Fifth child.
Our fifth child was named not me, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were some passages besides Deuteronomy 21, as you guys are looking that one up, that's actually in there, but we don't follow that one. But what were some passages that really influenced you and Kathy when it comes to parenting?
Well, when it comes to parenting, the Bible doesn't give you like this parenting manual, okay? And the same way in the church, we don't have a church manual. We just went through a series on Titus, and there's some broad guidelines of what the church should look like, but each church around the world looks very different. And so parenting can look very different. But here's some things that really stood out to me. Genesis 2:24 is up here on the screen. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And you say, well, what's that got to do with parenting? Well, Kathy and I, when we got married, we became one flesh. We were a team. Mm-hmm. And at 22 years old, if we lived to 82, we might be married 60 years. We're going to have our kids at home for maybe 18. So we felt like God was telling us the most important relationship is the family, is the husband and the wife. Mm. And we went hiking with my daughter Katie yesterday for an hour and a half or so, and I was asking her all these questions. And I said, so some of the things we did right as a parent, what were some things we did right that you saw we did right? And she says, first one off the top of my head, she said, I never had to worry about you and Mom splitting up. Just all my friends, there was a huge lack of security. It affected them emotionally because they're always worried about if Mom would stay with Dad and what that would look like and who would they go with. And, you know, and she says, we never had to worry about that. So Kathy and I took time away from the kids, and our kids knew that our relationship was the most important relationship in the family. Didn't mean we valued them any less.
Right.
We love them. Right. But that was very important to us. So
healthy, healthy parenting starts with a healthy
marriage. Absolutely. For sure. Yeah. Absolutely. A second one, this one kind of always haunted me in Exodus. You got the Ten Commandments, and the first one is, you shall have no other gods before me. The second one is, you shall not have any idols. And then you come to verse 5, and it says, you shall not worship these idols or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands to those who love me and keep my commandments. This is all about legacy. Hmm. And the legacy I wanted to establish with my kids. I wanted my kids to grow up knowing and loving the Lord, and that would be passed on to my grandkids, my great-grandkids, and that's what I wanted my legacy to be. And, you know, the whole idea of that my sins, my things being passed on kind of to my kids, I've been counseling within the church for years, and it's amazing how when people come in and need counseling, you see the same problem in their parents or their grandparents or right up the family tree. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of haunted me a little bit, motivated me in a good way.
Sure.
And really made me want to develop a positive legacy spiritually for the kids.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Cool.
Another one, Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. In the 70s, this was kind of a hammer that Christian radio was constantly beating parents with, and it went something like this. Well, if you train up a child right, then he'll turn out right. And so if your child didn't turn out right, then you did something wrong. And that was, you know, and so it developed this attitude where if my kids turn out right, I can put the spiritual trophy on my mantle and look what I did, you know. And that's not what this verse means at all. And we could spend a whole Sunday morning on this verse. But let me kind of paraphrase what this verse says. Train up a child according to his bent.
Or her bent.
Or her bent.
Yes.
His or her bent. Each of our kids is different. God has designed them each for a different purpose. And our goal as a parent is to help them discover how God created them, what they're good at, what they're not good at, what does God want them to do in life, and then help them go there. Mm-hmm. And there'd be no reason for them to depart for it because it's very obvious that's what God created. That's where they get their passion and their enjoyment in life. So train up a child according to his bent. So you need to know your kids, mm-hmm. or you can't do that.
Yeah. So thinking about that, as far as the guiding and the correcting and all that, how did you handle the discipline aspect of everything? Because discipline's a big...
This puts
big
a big
topic,
question.
Right? And I know there's a spectrum out there where, you know, it's so, how
right.
did you guys, just you guys, not saying we all have to do it this way. But
so again, this is Ned and Kathy.
This is Ned and Kathy only, yeah.
But Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and the rod of discipline will remove it far from him. I think there's another verse that says, even though you beat him with the rod, he shall not die.
That's a good one.
It's in there.
That's another life verse that I have.
And I didn't look it up and put it in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, so is corporal punishment acceptable to God? And the answer is yes. It's in the scriptures. And so we use that. We didn't use it much. There were rare cases where we needed to physically paddle our kids. But we did it in love. We did it carefully. There's one spot that God designed for you to physically punish your kids, and it's padded. And that's what we used. And when they're young and they have a diaper on, even better. You know, it doesn't hurt so much as scares them, and they know they've been bad. Mm-hmm. But so anyway, that that's one question that's kind of always out there, so we'll just deal with it. But mm-hmm. understand, our culture and our court system doesn't like that concept. So caution. Be careful where you do that. We always did it at home. We always did it in private.
Sure.
We always took the child in another room, and we lovingly did it.
Right, right. I remember you talking about this years ago. That kind of helped me as far as, you know, making sure you had the paddle aspect, not your hand hit me, you know, kind of thing, and it's not you hitting
that.
Yes, kind
of we had a little paddle, nothing, no, not like what hung in my principal's office that I was scared to death of that had holes drilled in it.
Right.
But it was just a little thing, and what that keeps you from doing is using your own body reactively in discipline, like smacking. You know, if you're going to do it, then you've got to go somewhere. You've got to get that. And what's interesting is my kids were teenagers. That thing disappeared. I don't know where it went. I've asked all three of them. They won't fess up. But
what's the philosophy behind that then? What, you know, as far as, because spanking doesn't work for every child. Like one of mine doesn't matter, you know.
Doesn't
it's just
matter.
Like, so what is kind of the underlining philosophy when it comes to that?
Well, one of my points in here, so let's deal with first, we'll get
I'm
that
I might jump
second.
Ahead. Okay.
Yeah. So first point is understand the difference between childish irresponsibility and willful defiance, okay? Your children are going to do child stuff. You know, they're going to spill their milk. At certain ages, you expect that. So you don't punish them for that. That's childish irresponsibility. But when they willfully defy you, you need to deal with that, and you need to win victoriously. They need to understand that they can't be defiant against your authority.
Right.
And the sooner you nip that in the bud, the less anger, the less frustration, the less they just know and they respond. So you got to learn the difference between those two. But to answer your question, second point is use whatever appropriate discipline works. Some kids, the spanking doesn't do anything.
Right.
Katie, I don't know if I ever spanked Katie, because I could look at Katie and just say like three words and she would just have a meltdown. Mm-hmm. She would be crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it took. For your kids, it might be some kids hate timeouts. You know, if I'm bad, cause Kathy sends me to my room. I love timeouts. But some of your kids may love, you know, not like timeouts, so do that. If they like video games and you take that away, do that. But whatever appropriate discipline is most effective with your child, then use that.
Right. Because it's got to make it what?
Personal.
And you got to make it?
Effective.
You got to make it hurt, right? Is what you were.
Yeah.
It's got to hurt somehow.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's got to not physically hurt,
right.
But it's got to hurt somehow.
It's got to make them not want to do that again.
Right, right.
Right.
So find what's most important to them and take that away. Right. So
another one is expect them to follow through on the first time you tell them something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds impossible, but the sooner you implement that, the better. You know, how many of you want your kids to do what you tell them the first time? Okay? How many of you want them to do it the third time you tell them? Or the fifth time you tell them? Nobody wants that. So why do we do that? So, if, you know, and then we count. You know, if they don't do it the first or second or third time, then, okay, well, I'm counting to three. And if you don't, so our kids knew if they didn't do it when we told them, then there was a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it avoided all the anger. It avoided all the frustration. They learned that if dad, mom said something, you know, that's ideal.
Sure it is.
Parenting doesn't always work that way. I mean,
right,
Kathy would
be
sitting here going, you know, stay-at-home mom and dealing with the kids all day, every day. But that's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the goal, is to back that all up. And just when you tell your kids to do something, they should respect that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where are we? One of my mentors said, you know, in raising kids, you need to love them and discipline them in love. You know, whenever I'd go to him with a child parenting question, he'd just say, love them and discipline them in love. You know, and those were his goals. So you got to love your kids, and they need to know that when you discipline them, it's out of love. So always discipline in love, and if you can't, wait. Mm. Our kids can get us frustrated. They can get us angry, and that's not the time to discipline your child.
Mm.
You need to wait. You need to calm down. You need to do it lovingly and calm and not in volume. Volume doesn't accomplish anything. Next one is be consistent. Kind of talked about that. Always follow through. If there's a consequence for a certain action, then always follow through. Otherwise, they'll not know when they can get away with it and when they can't.
Right.
And so they'll test that. And then if I ever did need to punish my child, I would make them tell me why I was punishing them. I wanted to make sure they understood, so they'd have to tell me. Sometimes it took a while to get it out of them because they didn't want to admit it. But yeah, I'd always make them tell me why before they got disciplined.
Who stole the paddle? I'm not telling.
Not me. It was our fifth child.
Cool. All right.
And then finally, just a verse to throw up there, Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Our goal as fathers or mothers is not to provoke our children to anger. And we can be dictators. And maybe it sounds like I'm a little dictatorial up here with my kids, but I wasn't. It was loving. It was, you know, there was respect involved. But you can discipline. You can be a dictator. And you can exasperate your children and drive them to anger.
If you're a parent, here's a fun one to do if you want to exasperate your kids. Ask them the question, are you supposed to say no to me? Just think about that one. Yeah. Anyways, that'll get them through this loop. Anyways, don't do that. I'm just joking. What did the role of the church? So we talked about last week using our outside voices, meaning we have a whole church. We have outside voices that can really, we can use to leverage our kids' spiritual growth and get them and help point them and keep them on the right direction. So what role did the church play in their spiritual growth?
Very much like this church. Our church where we raised our kids had great kids programs with Sunday school and children's church. Not unlike our Awana and our Grace Kids, where our kids learned their Bibles. They learned about God. They learned about their relationship with Him. So that was one. Our kids were always involved in our life groups, which was invaluable to us as parents because our kids got to know other adults in the context of a small group. And Katie told me yesterday, she says, you know what, if something ever happened to you and Mom, I know who I would go to in terms of kind of that parent and parent role, you know, and it would be the families that we had life groups with when they were growing up that we don't have a lot of connection with now, but she's very close to those families. So life groups were very important to our kids. District events, we had Bible quizzing, we had camp, we had retreats, we had national conference. Bar none, probably the biggest impact in my kids' lives was Bible quizzing. Mm-hmm. They learned more about their Bibles from doing Bible quizzing, but nationwide Bible quizzing has ceased because of the whole time thing. Sure. Families are too busy. Kids don't have time to study their Bible. They don't have time for quiz practice. They don't have time for the district quiz rallies. So across the country, quizzing has ceased because of that, which is a shame. Church was important. At first, we were teaching our kids that church was important. But Katie said, you know, after a while, by the time I was a teenager, she says, church was important to me. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody invited me or I was on a sports team and they were doing something, she says, I just can't come. I got church. It was unlike what Paul shared last week. For a while, it was his parents, but then after a while, it became him.
Right.
And so we taught our kids that church was important. We were in church, with rare exception, did we miss.
So I also asked your kids questions without you knowing this.
Did you?
I did. And one of the questions was, what did you think was your biggest, what did your parents do to help your spiritual formation and growth? And all three of them said this answer, church life. They got us into church, and they were willing to.
You're serious? You did this?
I did this.
Behind my back?
Behind your back, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We'll they said other, that.
They did.
Good.
So I got the emails. But they all pointed to the fact that you were willing, even like with BNYC, which is National Youth Conference, and what was the Operation Barnabas and all those things, you were willing to shell out some bigger bucks for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you felt that was a great thing to do to get them that experience, that friendship, that ministry time. So, yeah, they were all pointing to the same thing. So.
And everybody in our church, when we were raising our family, they all had four kids. So maybe that's why we had our fourth. I don't know. But they all had four kids. And so our kids had a lot of friends in the church. And so, you know, remember, the husband-wife relationship is the most important. So Kathy and I would get away every year, at least once a year, maybe twice a year. And, you know, Kristen would go to this house, and Nathan would go to that house, and Katie would go to that house, and Kendra would go there. Mm-hmm. And so they'd all go stay with friends. And then we had date nights, too, and we had childcare training set up with other couples. You know, this month we're going out, next month you go out, we'll take, you know. So we had that all prearranged, so you didn't feel like you were imposing on anybody.
Right.
It was just part of church life. That's
right.
Just what we did.
Yep.
And then we had young couples who didn't have kids yet, and they would come stay at our house for a weekend and let us stay at their apartment so that Kathy and I could get away.
Really?
Yeah. So they got to learn something about being with kids for a weekend. Our kids got to know some other adults, and that was awesome.
Cedarville students. Anybody want to take us
yeah.
on that one? Let's swap. Beth yeah. and I could live in the dorm for a week. That would be awesome.
So, you know, as a church, it was a family. That was our second family.
Mm, that's cool.
Katie said that yesterday. She says that was like our extended family was our church family.
And I hope that's what we can develop here more and more, that when we look around, we see Aunt, you know, like Aunt Diane Webb. You know, Diane Webb, that's Aunt Diane for our kids. That's just a fix. So. In our family. So how did you parent, so getting back to that whole idea of train up a child, you know, actually train up towards his or her bent kind of thing, how did you parent each child differently? Because every kid is different. Every kid has, you know, their own issues and their own strengths and weaknesses. What did you do to, how did you do that?
Well, you got to, you know, we all, if we have kids, we know this, no two kids are alike. So you got to get to know your kid. And if you're a stay-at-home mom, you probably know your kids inside and out. As a dad, I felt like I needed to spend time with my kids. I needed to know them. And again, different things are going to work with different kids. And different relationships, you know, mother-daughter relationships are usually tough, especially in the teenage years. Father-daughter relationships are probably the easiest relationship in the family, if you study, you know, family units. And so I was really close to my daughters, and I wanted to get to know them, and they were very special to me. And so, yeah, we got to know them, we parented them, we disciplined them, we did a lot of things different with each kid. And so no two kids are alike, but understand also, and you're probably looking at this one and scratching your head, no two kids have the same parents, all right? I mean, you have your firstborn, and you parent them a certain way. Well, what happens when you have the secondborn? Well, you've learned a lot. You know, so what if the pacifier falls on the floor? You know?
That's right.
And so a lot of things change. And so the firstborn, you know, by the time you get the baby in the family, he gets away with everything. So no two kids have the same parents, and you got to understand that, too, and try to be, I don't know, consistent.
Sure, yeah. So as we start to wrap up, we have parents who have young kids, parents who have maybe older teenagers, and parents who have kids who are now having kids. So for younger parents with younger kids, what would be some advice that you could leave us with?
First piece of advice is expect them to act their age. You know, if they're 2 years old, don't expect them to act five. They're two. They're going to do two-year-old stuff, okay? Secondly, expect them to act their age. If they're five, they shouldn't be acting like they're two, right? So at all levels, expect your kids to act their age. They need to mature. They need to grow up. If you're a family with young kids, couples get away. I remember when Kathy and I would get away, because what happens is husband and wife, you become focused on the kids and their needs and raising those kids, and it's daily and it's hourly, you know. And so Kathy and I, we'd go out to Glacier National Park. We'd go to Gatlinburg. We'd go in the Houston Woods, get away for a weekend. But it was kind of like, wow, this is the girl I married. She's really cool. And you kind of, that husband-wife relationship thing can get lost. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I mean, Nathan was telling me about a friend of his that I think their oldest child's 14, and they've never been away from their kids for 14 years. I'm just like, wow. Because you settle into this mom and dad role, and then
the kids
grow up, and when the kids leave, there's nothing there.
Right.
So, yeah, get away. And another one I think we need to recognize is we need to be proud of our kids, and that's different than being proud of our kids' accomplishments or our kids' appearance. There's an overemphasis. Just get on Facebook today and notice the overemphasis on our kids' appearance or what they've accomplished. Our kids need to know we're proud of them just because they're them. That's their identity, who they are as a person. We need to be proud of them. Hmm. But also, as younger parents, set up childcare training within the church. Get away. Make sure your marriage is first and foremost. And yeah.
Cool. All right.
Some bullet points there.
Parents with teenagers, what do you got for them? Because that's maybe the most difficult phase I hear sometimes.
Well, back up a minute. There. I've got these books up here. You know, when your kids are young, you need to be teaching them about God. You want to be demonstrating to them godly behavior. And also, understand that for 18 years, you're teaching your kids how to parent.
Yeah.
And you're teaching them what a godly wife and a godly husband looks like. Right. Also, you need to teach them about God. And there's a couple books usually we hand out when we dedicate children. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a child dedication in a while.
I know, we've been slacking.
We've got to get our kids dedicated. But, you know, here's everything a child should know about God. This is something you can sit down with them at night, read through, do it at the dinner table. Here's a Jesus storybook Bible. It's awesome. The gospel is woven throughout this.
Adults even love that one.
Yeah, very valuable books. You know, some of you dads may say, I don't know what to do with my kids. Well, here you go. Just, you know, we've got these in the office. You can get them on Amazon. And so those are ideal. Just, you know, you want your kids to get, you got to start them in that spiritual training.
Yeah.
And then with teenagers, what do I have down for teenagers? Spend time with them one-on-one.
Yeah.
Again, you got to know your teenager. Your teenager is beginning to make their own decisions. They're developing their own personality. And sometimes they may not respond to situations the way you think they should. You need to find out why. You need to know how they think. And so I spend a lot of time with my teens trying to get to know that, get to know their bent. Another thing Kathy and I did when we had teenagers is we had what I'd call counselor couples. We had people that had been through this before. Other people have raised teenagers. And so there were some Christian couples that had raised some awesome kids, and you know, 10 years ahead of us. And so we were ringing them up occasionally saying, here's the situation, what would you do and why? Mm-hmm. And so we, you know, we had those counselor couples. And this one comes from my son, Nate. He said, don't make your children your friends too soon. You're a parent, and some parents become just friends too soon, and it kind of ruins that parent relationship. Once they turn 18, they leave the house. Having your children become your friends is the most awesome thing in the world. I love my adult kids. Mm-hmm. But that can happen too soon, and it's that's not good. So be careful of that.
Cool. Okay. And then when it comes
to here's a great book, Parenting Adolescents, okay? Sometimes God is working on our lives through our kids. God has given us kids for a reason,
and sometimes
the reason we have the kids we do is because God's working on us, and this book really helps you with that, Parenting Adolescents by Kevin Huggins.
Awesome. And then finally, now that you're a grandparent and your kids are out of the house, and what's your advice for those who are in that same spot?
Adult children. Legally, they're on their own, and there's a certain sense in which you need to let them make their own mistakes and not always be there to bail them out. Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University, he always teaches your retirement comes first over your kids' college or bailing them out. Because, you know, I know of couples that are our age and older who can't afford to retire because they're always bailing their kids out financially.
Yeah.
So when your adult kids make mistakes, they need to learn to bail themselves out. Otherwise, they're going to keep making those mistakes. So.
I would say for young people, you know, for me, it was, I wanted to get out of the house. I wanted to be, you know, free, not because I didn't like the house or anything. I just wanted to be on my own, be responsible for myself. And I've noticed there's a kind of a shift there where kids and young people just seem like they don't really have that same value. And they don't mind asking mom and dad for a handout. They don't mind asking, you know, mom and dad for, you know, a loan and things like that. I really resisted doing that because I wanted to be, I leave and be on my own kind of thing. So I would say if young people, if you can not go right back to mom and dad and ask for help, you know, try to do it on, you know, try to work and, you know, that struggle is something that God, I think, uses to develop you personally and your character. And so I would encourage you to not just go back to mom and dad right away and,
yep,
you know, lean on the church a little bit. You know, if you need help, lean on the church or lean on, you know, but stop.
There's times to help your kids,
yeah,
but you don't want that to be a regular pattern.
Yeah.
As a father-in-law, be careful of questions from married kids. Sometimes one of my kids will come to me and say, what do you think about this issue? And I'll say, what does your spouse think? Right? Because if I agree with them and their spouse disagrees, then I'm between them and their spouse. So I'm careful with those questions. Mm-hmm. You know, they are a married couple, and they need to, you know, it makes sense that my kids might think like me, so I'm probably going to agree with them.
Sure.
And but it could be we're not right.
Right.
It could be that their spouse is right, and so I don't want to ever gang up on their spouse. And the last one is love and encourage and respect their spouse. I love both Andrew and Rayanne. I mean, they're part of our family. They're our kids. And Kathy knows this. I grew up, well, my in-laws, let's just say they were kind of critical, and it was always about what wasn't right, either around our home or in our church, or here's what you should do. And so I never felt like they appreciated, respected. It always felt like I was 16. Mm-hmm. And so I'm swinging the pendulum the other way, and I just want to encourage and love and respect that spouse that my children have chosen. And, yeah,
cool.
It's one of my goals.
Yeah, good. All right. And as a grandparent?
As a grandparent. Well, if I didn't have this silly building we were building, hopefully grandparents have more time. You know, Kathy spends a lot of time with the grandkids. And it's a different role than parenting. With parenting, you're with them 24/7. And with a grandparent, you can have fun with them. You know, you don't have as many of the discipline problems maybe. So it's just a whole different relationship. But you want to model what a godly person is to them. Mm-hmm. You want to be reading these books, you know, when they spend the night. You want to be reading Bible stories to them. You want to make sure they understand about God. And, you know, again, within the church, you know, grandparents, we need to be involved in kids ministry. Mm. You know, I don't think you ever get really too old to hold a baby in the nursery. I mean, our nursery could be staffed with grandparents. So that our young moms don't have to be in there. Right. And, you know, we have jobs in Awana where just listening to verses, you know. I know Bill Talby serves down there. Bill Talby's older than I am. He's really old.
Yeah.
So, and he loves kids. He's a bus driver.
He's awesome. Yeah.
He does it, you know. Yeah. So goals of grandparents, be involved not only in my grandkids' lives, but there's a lot of young kids around this church, and some of them gravitate to my weirdness and some of them don't. But
yeah.
We have fun.
Cool. Good. So don't underestimate what a role of the grandparent can still play in their grandchild's life, especially when it comes to faith.
Yeah.
I know we have stories where it was grandma, grandpa that got our kids into church and got our kids growing and stuff like that. So don't underestimate that.
But just understand that Kathy and I raised our kids one way.
Yeah.
Nate knows that, and Kristen knows that, okay? But their spouses were raised differently. And so they're going to have their own unique blend of parenting children, and it's not our job to interfere in that. Our job is to come alongside and help them.
Don't get in the middle.
And, don't give advice unless it's asked for. And,
cool.
Yeah,
good.
Careful with that.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for the advice. And, again, this is just Pastor Ned. So some topics to think about, because I want you to think about, especially if you're a younger parent, think about 20 years from now, if I would be interviewing you, what were things that you would want to say and not say as far as the mistakes that I made or the things that I did well and I want to do again? Think about in those categories because, you need to have a vision. You need to have a picture of where you want to be taking your young people and help them grow spiritually, because it's our job. It's our responsibility. This is something that is required of us. So I just want to end with some prayer time. I want to pray for our parents. I want to pray for young parents and parents who are wrestling with teenage years and grandparents and all that, because I know this is hard, and I want it just to be helpful today, practical. So hopefully that's some things to think about. So let me pray for us before we leave. Father, thank you so much for this responsibility. As we kind of wrap up our series, hopefully, God, that we focused in on the right things just to help our parents to understand that a relationship with you is the most important thing, both for them and for their children. And God, you have called us to lead in our homes, to guide our young people to a place where they know you, they trust you, and they want more of you. And God, I pray, Lord, that for our young parents who may or may not have had good models growing up, we pray, Lord, that you would break some of those cycles and create a new legacy in some homes where our parents are emphasizing, encouraging, talking about, modeling what it means to trust in you. God, I know that there are kids who are struggling emotionally, relationally, spiritually. I pray, Lord, that you would give parents just incredible amount of wisdom and guidance and just encouragement to keep going, to keep loving, to keep pointing them to you. God, I pray for our parents with teenagers who are transitioning, you know, the whole idea of starting to become more friends, and that's a hard balance, and wanting to be free, wanting to be on their own. I pray, Lord, that you give our parents of teenagers incredible wisdom on how to navigate those waters, because these are all new things for us. I pray that we would build relationships with other parents who have been there, have done that, who could help speak into our lives, who could see from the outside looking in where we're kind of missing, where we're kind of falling short. I pray, Lord, that you would just help our parents who have done that, who have been there, to be able to speak into our lives, to give them the courage, to give them that boldness to come alongside of us and to help out, whether that's giving us a night out, whether that's giving some advice. God, I pray, Lord, that you would encourage and strengthen our church in these ways. God, I thank you for grandparents. They can play in such an important role in young people, and I pray, Lord, that you would help our older folks in this church look at our younger people and say, we want to adopt them. We want to be on their team. We want to encourage them. God, I pray, Lord, that as we continue to grow as a church, we grow as a family together. And that means, God, that our young people matter. God, our older folks matter. And I pray, Lord, that you would just help us to see how we can encourage each other in these areas. Thanks so much for Jesus. Thanks that he brings us together. And we pray all this in his precious name. Amen.